We're all about building skills here. Skills that will help us move through the hard parts of life a little more easily and a little more comfortably. It's those skills that go a long way in keeping us sober. In this episode, we've invited three inspiring women to come share with us how they deal with insecurity and what they've done to increase their self-esteem since they stopped drinking. If we can learn healthy ways to step out of our insecurity and into confidence, we'll be able to handle life much better. Stay tuned for some great insight and some helpful tips that you'll be able to use the next time insecurity gets the best of you.
Welcome to Through the Glass Recovery Podcast, where we believe that connection is the opposite of addiction, vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and that recovery isn't just rewarding, but it's also a lot of fun. We're your hosts, Julie and Steve. Listen as we get together with friends to shed light on the hard things, talk about the other side of addiction, and how we create a life so full there's no space left for alcohol.
I just want to jump in real quick and make sure you know that we host a weekly support group on Zoom. It's not AA, not any specific program. It's people just like you that are realizing how important connection is and how much better it feels to have a place to talk about what they're going through. If you could use some extra support, visit our website at throughtheglassrecovery.com and enter your email. We'll send you all the details.
Right. Hello. We are hanging with the girls today. I love this when Steve gets to kick it with the ladies, but I think it's going to be awesome. Super happy to have all three of you here with us. So we have Janelle, Azure, and Brianna, and we're going to do introductions first before we dive into this topic, which I think is just going to be a really good one. Yeah. So I'm going to start with Janelle. Do you want to tell us about yourself a little bit?
Sure. So I'm Janelle Testa. I'm from Boston. I've been sober for 10 years. I was sober in AA for 9 years. And now the last year I've been sort of figuring it out on my own outside of 12-step. And yeah, I post a lot about sobriety and recovery and stuff on my Instagram, which is just my name, Janelle Testa. And I wrote a book called Make a Home Out of You, a memoir. It's an addiction recovery memoir. So that's coming out in September, out for pre-order in March. So yeah, I think that's about it.
Really cool.
Yeah, definitely let us know when that comes out because we'll share it on our social media too.
Yeah, and definitely send the links and stuff too. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes so people can check it out and pre-order. And really, really cool. That is a huge accomplishment to write a memoir.
Thank you so much.
Been on my list and I don't know if I'll ever actually have the courage to do it. So props to you for actually making it happen. Good for you.
Can I say something to Janelle real quick?
Absolutely.
I found you on socials the other day and I went down quite the rabbit hole. You probably got a lot of notifications from me in the past 2 days.
Oh my God, amazing. I'll have to follow you back.
It was
super cool.
Excited.
Really cool. Yeah, I love the way this podcast always brings the right people together and connects people who really needed to meet. It seems like the universe just has a way of making that happen. So really cool.
And we don't plan these. We send out invites and then you guys all pick the date that you're available. We don't say, let's have these three ladies and try that. No, this is just the universe working its magic.
We love it. We love to see it happen. So, yeah. So next we're going to go with Azure.
All right. Hey, so my name's Azure. I'm 34. I live in Federal Way, Washington, which is like 30 miles south of Seattle. I'm a mom of two. I've got a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And outside of my sober life, I'm a hospice nurse. That's what I do for my job. I've been sober for a little over a year. I actually celebrated my one-year sober date on February 5th of this year. Mm-hmm. So thank you. It was really cool. So yeah, I'm just now over the hump of like, you know, just really doing what you need to do to get through that first year. And now I think I'm kind of in what a lot of people would consider like the hard part, the hard work, you know? And so where all the inner work is done and stuff. So I'm just facing that challenge head on and taking it day by day. So I've loved this community. I've loved everything that I've learned so far and all the people that I've been meeting, especially on Instagram, like where all of us are. I started my Instagram account, sober.chronicles, way early in my journey, purely as a way to keep me accountable for my sobriety. I just thought it would be a good way to you know, make sure I showed up for myself every day. And then it just kind of blew up. And it kind of blows my mind every day, to be honest, about the connections I've made and the people that not only help me, but, you know, that I can also help them. So it's been really humbling for me, and I love the opportunity to be able to share my experiences and my thoughts and meet people. So thanks for having me here. And I really look forward to this conversation today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. I have to say, when Steve and I got on Instagram, which we did, you know, basically just to promote the podcast, yours is one of the earlier accounts that we followed. And so I'm all about like vulnerability and on it, like raw honesty and all of that stuff. That's just, I really feel like, I don't know, an attraction to that kind of people. And you are one of those people. You are just so honest in your posts on Instagram, and I love it. It's so refreshing. So
thank you.
So yeah. Thanks for doing what you do.
Yeah.
And of course, last but not least, we have Brianna.
Hi. Hey, ladies.
And Steve.
My name's Brianna. I'm from the capital region of New York, like Albany, I guess other people will know that. I live in Western New York by Canada now. I'm celebrating 4 years on February 27th. And I'll say it that way because it's going to air after.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right on.
So 4 years on 4 years on February 27th. I am part of Blacklist Podcast. Last week, I started FTK Mom Talk. Recorded the second episode today. I'm actually coming here from there. Fuck them kids, Mom Talk. What's the find it? And, I mean, I love everybody in the community. And I got sober with Matt. And I have 2 years off of Suboxone since I last dosed. And getting sober, it's been amazing and wonderful.
Really cool. Well, thank you so much for being here. We will definitely include links to your podcasts in our show notes so that our listeners can check that out. And just really glad you're here to share your story. So for the topic, I think a common challenge for nearly everyone is dealing with low self-esteem and feelings of insecurity. When you're in recovery, struggles with self-esteem can even trigger a desire to drink. It's a process, though, right? Sometimes starting from the ground up when we get sober to build a healthy sense of self-esteem and self-worth. So what does that look like for you? How has self-esteem played a role in your recovery? And how have you learned to build it up? You guys are welcome to dive in. There are no rules here.
I think self-esteem was a huge thing that I had to learn to even just start having when I got sober. Because, you know, like, I always relied on something else for that. You know, the drugs made me happy. You know, the alcohol made me liked and stuff like that. And it was never just me. You know, I always relied on other people, substances, stuff like that. So building that self-esteem and, like, loving myself and truly loving who I am. I used to be scared to lose everything around me. Now I'm the only one that matters. You know, when somebody is with me, they're going to be scared to lose me for once. And I think that's what self-esteem is just making ourselves number one and believing it. I think that's the hard part, is really believing it.
Believing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Making those changes, you know, in our lives and stuff like that where, you know, we're good, grounded, starting our lives. I was just talking about this a little while ago, like, some people look at their lives and they're like, you know, I'm 40, let's say, you know, I have nothing. But if you only have, you know, if you have 90 days sober, like, you just started living your life 90 days ago. Mm-hmm. Like, look how much you got in those 90 days. And that'll help you feel better instead of looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say, like, I had no self-esteem before sobriety and then I got perfect self-esteem after sobriety because I had, you know, I had a moderate amount of self-esteem, but I feel like it was, like, extrinsically based. Like, it was always on my performance, my relationships, my drinking, like, whatever. It was very much, like, driven by outside factors. And now it's, like, internal. Like, no matter what is happening in my life, like, I fundamentally think I'm okay. And, like, that's not perfect all the time. Sometimes I have my days where I'm like, oh, I'm not okay. But I think I have generally this thread where I feel like I'm good enough. And it's not impacted by, like, my partner cheating on me yesterday or, like, you know, whatever's going on. I'm not like, it doesn't impact me so much. So I feel like, yeah, I just have a more solid base now because of recovery.
So did that happen, like, just because you quit drinking? Or like, what did that work look like to get to that point? I'm curious. Like, can you even describe what that looks like?
I mean, honestly, I think a lot of 12-step was really helpful, you know, starting to uncover those layers of like shame and guilt that I had built up over time. And like this understanding that other things drove me to be good enough. Like, I think doing a 4-step was really helpful in like uncovering my fundamental worth and a lot of the work that I owe it to a lot of AA, you know. And now being outside of AA, I place a lot of emphasis on self-trust and intuition. And like, I am learning to trust that I like have an intuition that is worth listening to, and that like I have this voice inside me that tells me the right things. And that like, because of that, I feel like I can trust myself. I feel like I'm good enough, you know? So yeah, I think a combination of what AA has given me and a combination of the work that I've done since I've left AA.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have anything you want to throw in there, Azure?
And so, yeah, I can chime in. So my self-esteem, you know, especially throughout my 20s and stuff, really stemmed from feelings of just like really needing to impress people and live up to what I thought certain expectations were that everyone outside of, you know, my social circle and those who were really close to me had expectations of what my life needed to look like and what I was doing with my life. And I don't even really know why that was. You know, I know a lot of people's low self-esteem and all that stuff stems from their childhoods. And of course, I do have all that, but I was never raised to feel that way. So I don't even know where it came from. So I'll work with that more on my therapist to try to figure that out. But so I was constantly trying to do that throughout, you know, my 20s and then into my 30s. And so I was doing things that I wasn't really doing for myself. I was doing for other people. And it just made me feel like I knew that I was putting on a facade. And so it made me feel like I was fake. And so for me, my self-esteem actually started getting better from the day that I got sober because of how I was feeling. You know, it would cause me to drink and then it would cause me to go into these spirals of shame and anxiety and self-hatred and why can't you get a hang of this? And then once I stopped drinking, all that stopped. And it actually got so bad when I was drinking that I was starting to have like fleeting thoughts of suicide because I was just at an all-time low, you know. So I took all of that out and then my self-esteem just started to skyrocket. Of course, I've had to do other inner work, you know, figure out why I was drinking and do all of those things. But to wake up every single day and be proud of myself now and not have those feelings of shame and guilt that were attached solely to my drinking, it's caused my self-esteem to really flourish in sobriety. So
yeah, I feel that, the fake part, right? I did the same thing. Everybody's expectations was like what I based my whole life on. And then I did this thing where I also made up expectations if I didn't know what they were. So like, you know, my husband never clearly communicated to me, this is what I expect of a wife. So instead of just being myself, I was like, here's what I think he expects of me. And then I just started hustling to try to make that come true. Obviously, that bar was like a million times higher than he would have ever set it, right? Because I think that's what we do to ourselves. We set our bar so high that it's impossible. And I just assumed everybody else's bar was set that high and that I had to just constantly be trying to reach that. One of the things that I did early on was I tried to strip away all the expectations of my parents and society and my friends and my husband and my kids and get rid of all of those expectations and break it down to, what do I expect of myself? What does a good enough mom look like to me? What does a good enough wife look like to me? You know, I live in a really small town, so I was really involved in the community. What does good enough for me look like when it comes to serving on the community and, you know, the committees and the boards that I was on? And I actually sat down with my journal and I wrote out, like, what does a good mom look like? A good mom sometimes yells at her kids, but also loves them and they know that she loves them. And that's kind of the list that I made. And I mean, I'm a journaler, so I wrote a lot of pages. But to be able to strip it all away and go to, this is good enough for me. This is what I expect of myself. And as long as I can be these normal human things, then I'm okay. And I think that was really like and I must have done that like a month or two into recovery, because I was so exhausted trying to keep up with all these expectations that I was miserable and I couldn't drink. So I had to figure something out. So it was really early on in the journey, but I think that was like the foundation for me of getting into to the point where I was just okay as I was without being so perfect and always overachieving.
I love the idea of like good enough, because I feel like when I think about self-esteem, my sponsor told me early on that like self-esteem happens from doing esteemable acts, that like you build up these acts, but they don't have to be perfect. Like it could be just journaling or taking a shower, or like these little acts add up to self-esteem, and like it's just good enough. Like it doesn't have to be this perfect thing where I'm doing everything super well. It's just, yeah, these small little acts that add up.
It's about the little things, right? Doing all the little things are those little building blocks to being able to actually feel better about yourself. For me, it's almost like the great reset. The expectations that I thought I had for myself, and I'm reminding myself now of what work looked like, and there was a crap ton of expectations at work, and there was even more expectations of how I was to perform at work, and I would let myself down constantly because my expectations of myself were really, really high. And I started letting go of all of it. Like all of the expectations needed to be reset. I hermited. I stopped doing all of the extra things, and I went right down to bare minimum, and then I started picking things back up again. What is going to work and what isn't going to work, and then learning how to stand up for myself. I never knew how to stand up for myself. I never knew how to say no. I always said yes, or I shut up. And I just let people put words in my mouth or expectations on me. And I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to communicate in like a good, healthy way. And so a lot of the times, if I didn't have the words, then I wouldn't say anything. And then I would be left holding that bag, because that's a bag I'm holding if I don't say anything. Silence is acceptance unless you say otherwise, right? And I had a boss that told me that. Silence is acceptance, and then I'm too scared to say anything or stand up for myself in front of a group of people. Well, that's all self-esteem. That all comes from the inside, believing that my thoughts are worthy, believing that my voice matters. It's not believing that everyone else thinks that my voice matters that makes that okay. It's me believing that my opinion is actually worth a grain of salt. And if you don't like it, that's fine. I had a really a hard time with people not liking my opinion. And then I took that personally.
For sure. I think what you hit on there is huge. Learning to stand up for yourself is how you said, like that, like starts snowballing self-worth and self-esteem. You do it once and you're like, holy shit, that felt amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you're like more able to do it. I remember the first time I stood up for myself, and it wasn't even big. My husband said something and it was a little bit snarky and it hurt my feelings. It wasn't horrible, right? But normally I would have just internalized that and kept silent, and then I would have stewed, and then I would have felt really bad about myself, and then I would have resented him, you know, the whole mess. And so to just be like, hey, this thing you said hurt my feelings, and I'd appreciate it if you didn't do that. And he was like, oh, I had no idea. Yeah, I didn't mean it that way. And then I was like, I did it. I stood up for myself. And when you do it, even just in those little ways, you build so much self-worth and confidence and belief in yourself. I think that's a really important point.
One of the other things I did early on, I was guilty of saying sorry a lot. And every time I said sorry for something I didn't mean, I minimized myself. And that just cuts at my own self-worth and my own self-esteem. I'm doing it to myself. I'm literally guilty of knocking myself down, not having the courage to see the other side of that. So I wrote down, it was like early day, I was in day 100s, and I wrote down my own definition of what sorry meant to me. And after that day, when the thought came to my mind about apologizing for something, if that didn't meet the definition that I wrote down for myself, I shut up. And the silence was really, really hard and awkward to sit in, because I was so good at taking the onus and the ownership away from other people to finish that sentence or to see what their action was going to be based on me not saying sorry. that it was like, it was really hard because that's what I was used to. But a lot of my self-esteem and self-confidence came from not apologizing for something that did not require an apology.
That's a really interesting point, Steve. I'm actually going to sit down and do that myself after that, because I'm not near as guilty of it now, saying sorry all the time. But oh man, when I was drinking, I was the queen of sorry. Oh my God. Just constantly. My husband, even he'd be like, why are you keep apologizing? You know, because again, it just stemmed from knowing that my drinking caused me guilt and shame. So I just felt the need to say sorry, even if I was just sitting on the couch doing nothing, you know. But it's definitely something that I think is just, you know, kind of expected in our society. If even if it's something you don't feel like you need to say sorry for, you just kind of do it. But you're right, it brings you down a little bit to have to say it. And so I'm definitely gonna do what you did and write down my definition and try to hold myself to only doing it when it meets the criteria. I like that a lot.
It's interesting. I'll send you the journal entry that I wrote for I'm sorry, so you can see it after you've done it. You send me a message and I'll send you what I wrote way back then. But it's an interesting experience. I'll give it that. And I still hold to that today. Even when someone passes away, I really hate saying I'm sorry for your loss, because I feel like that is just pushing that person away and it's not giving them really, I think we're guilty as a society for using sorry in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to hear that. And that's supposed to come off as kindness. And in the end, it's not.
That's the difference between sympathy and empathy. Right? Sympathy is, I'm sorry you're over there suffering. And empathy is, I'll sit with you in your suffering and, you know, be here for you. And I think that's really important.
And so it's interesting when you start learning how to say sorry properly, then you have to come up with a brand new vocabulary for a lot of other things.
And, you know, it doesn't go for like, you know, giving someone your condolences or something, but I say it to myself and I say it to other people, you know, your feelings are valid and we don't have to agree on them. Your feelings are valid, but we don't have to agree. And I think it just, you know, it makes me feel better too, because not everybody's going to, you know, we're not all going to feel the same in situations, but knowing that you're not wrong for feeling how you feel, I think is a huge thing to like loose ourselves up, because we're never, you know, well, why? I shouldn't have did that. I shouldn't have felt that way. Why'd I do that? You know, it's, you were valid in the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to boost each other's self-esteem too, I think, just to let people know that they're okay. So question for you guys, do you ever, and I know Janelle, you kind of touched on this, like you're not going to say your self-esteem was awful or you know, non-existent before you got sober, but then it's not perfect now either. Do you guys ever fall back into insecurity? And like, what does that look like? And I guess especially, how do you dig yourself back out of it? Because I think, you know, I can say my self-esteem is 1,000 times better than it was when I was drinking, and I've done so much work on myself. But that's like my go-to. When things start crashing around me, insecurity is my go-to place. And all of a sudden, all that stuff starts again. I would love to hear what you guys have learned about that too, because I'm guessing I'm probably not entirely alone and that insecurity probably crops up for all of us.
That's my go-to too. It gets stressful and it gets hard, and the first place I go to is insecurity, is where I'm most vulnerable, and I can pick away and chew away at that like it's a scab. It's hard.
Yeah, I think when I go there, which happens, you know, like sometimes I just think I'm a piece of shit, not like this is a bad situation, this is unfortunate, or like you're not doing your best. It's just like I am fundamentally broken. Like sometimes my brain goes there, but I have more skills now, like whether that's within or externally, like I have therapists and resources that I'm able to like pull myself out of it a little bit quicker, where I'll be there for a few hours, maybe even a few days, but I don't live there anymore. Like I used to live in that place, you know, where I was always just bad. And I feel like I'm able to be like, to reason my way through. And if I can't reason my way through, I action my way through, like yoga or journaling. And, you know, like those little esteemable acts that I was talking about, like add up. And they pull me out of that place. But yeah, I definitely go there.
I love that. If I can't the action your way through. No, go ahead.
What you have to say, just like Janelle said, definitely happens to me too. And I used to live there too. So as instead of just constantly feeling insecure, like I had been for the last almost decade of my life, they definitely still come and go, especially as a mother. Mom guilt is a real thing. It happens with just the tiniest little things. And especially a lot of mine has to do with kind of the things I was doing when my kids were little, in regards to my drinking. And I just kind of think back to those things and I start to get a little, you know, I start to feel a little insecure and have regrets, but then I just try to pull myself out of it and just think, you know, it's okay to reflect on what you did and who you were and what you were doing at that time. But I just remind myself of how far I've come and how much potential I have to achieve, to do better in the future. And that really helps pull me out of whatever insecurities I'm feeling at that time. I also did a really interesting self-reflection on a yoga retreat that I went to this past summer. And I was relatively new to being sober. I was like 3 or 4 months sober. And she had all of us stand in front of a mirror. And there was a group of probably 20, 25 women. So we were all not only just being vulnerable for ourselves, but in front of everybody else. And we stood in front of a mirror and we sat there and we talked to ourselves about what we're proud of within ourselves, what we've accomplished, what we, you know, just anything that really popped up, but it had to be positive. And you had to look yourself in the eyes. And I don't know if any of you have ever done that, but I certainly had not. And it was incredibly uncomfortable. Yes, it was very scary, but it was transforming. I mean, I do still try to do that every once in a while, especially if I'm feeling really down, to just try to bring me back to a place where I feel good about myself again. So definitely something to try. It is so awkward at first, but it was a really awesome activity.
I can't imagine doing that in front of other people. I would have a hard time just doing that with myself.
Right.
That's amazing.
It was, you know, by this time we had spent like 3 days together. It was all about vulnerability and all about self-worth and all that. So we, you know, all the walls were down. We were just like, everyone was crying. It was awesome. But yeah, it was great.
That sounds like an amazing experience.
It was.
It does.
Really
even
cool.
Even from a guy's perspective, that's like an amazing experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Brianna? Do you still do insecurity stuff? Do you still find yourself in that place?
Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, like Asher was saying, like thinking back to the mom that I've been, you know, and all, not thinking about, you know, how long I've been a good mom and a present mom for my kids, but I don't know why I don't think about that. I think about the other stuff and it's tough. But, you know, another thing I say is, you know, feel your feelings. You know, like Janelle said, or Janice, you can sit there and feel them, but I have skills now. You know, I'm not going to sit there and dwell on something for a couple of days. You know, I'm going to feel my feelings and go on about what makes me happy instead of being upset. And I think I used to focus a lot on that while I was still in addiction. You know, why me? Why me? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? You know, and I realized that once I went through a lot of counseling and a lot of therapy since I've been sober. So it's a lot of work to be able to pull yourself out. And I don't want to say like I'm not insecure, but those moments, as you know, I'm getting further and further into my recovery and growing my self-esteem, they happen a lot less now. They don't go away, but it's gotten better.
I think too, there's the, I don't know, like I'll find myself being insecure. And then the first thing I do is, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Why am I acting? Why do I feel this way? Like it's all wrong and like I shouldn't feel that way. And I know for me, like one of the biggest things that makes me spiral is going into the, why do I feel this way? I shouldn't feel this way. I should be able to feel differently. And these feelings are wrong. And then it just makes it worse. So when you talk about feeling your feelings, like there's that, it's okay that you're feeling insecure right now. This is valid. Like I'll say that to myself, you know, that's fine. Here's the situation. Here's what happened. This is how I'm feeling. And you know, I have this handout that I give to clients, but it walks you through that process. Here's the situation. Here's what happened. Here's who was there. Here's what I'm feeling. And then the last question is, what do I need to do now to take care of myself? And I think that's such a powerful question, because a lot of times when we're in the feel your feeling state, it's like, okay, I'm done feeling it. I'm tired of feeling this way. Now what? And I think maybe that's where the action comes. Like Janelle was talking about, like you can process it, but then what do I need to do to take care of me is such a cool way to give yourself some direction and actually do something about it. Even if that just means like take a nap, right? But at least you're doing a thing. I think that's really cool. So I was doing some reading, and this wasn't in preparation for this episode, but it's come up a couple times. It's I'm sure you guys know about Brené Brown, but her book, I Thought It Was Just Me, and I've read it a few times now, but she talks about the 12 categories of shame. And these are all like things that almost universally we all feel shame surrounding. One of them's appearance. One of them is parenting and motherhood. I know that's come up for you for a couple of you. Things like success and wealth and mental health and addiction and sex and all of these things. But apparently these are areas that we all tend to feel shame. And I think that a lot of that, the insecurity and the low self-esteem, comes from not dealing with the shame surrounding those different areas of our lives. I don't know.
Well, shame is I am bad, right? And guilt is I did bad. So it's guilt, I can action my way out of guilt. Shame, I can action my way out of that too, but it looks a hell of a lot different. And then I'm guilty of confusing both of them, because I go directly to I am bad, not I did bad. Even though if I did something bad, I could just apologize for that. We can move on. But shame is all a self-esteem thing.
Yeah. I was thinking about what Brianna was saying about being like therapized, like being in a lot of therapy. My therapist has taught me like this overgeneralizing thing that like I, instead of saying like this situation is bad, this action was bad, it's I am bad. You know, it's like it always goes to that shame piece. Mm-hmm. But it's that overgeneralization that like that gets me every time.
Yeah. For me, I like to tell on myself. I'll reach out to a friend or two, sometimes three, if needed, but that's when I'm in a place where I'm having a hard time of digging myself out of my own hole. And I'll say, like, I'll tell a friend that this is the hole I'm in right now, and this is the insecurity that I'm dealing with. I can be aware of it. And a lot of the times when I'm in that hole, somebody else will reach down and either give me that outside affirmation, because I still need some of that outside affirmation to help dig me out. Like this isn't a game I think that I play alone. I've played this game alone plenty enough beforehand, and that didn't do me very good. That was very isolating. So letting other people in, as you were, like you talked about in that group with a bunch of the ladies, letting other people in. And so society tells us that we must hide our flaws. Everything must be perfect on the outside. And then to stand in front of that and just embrace the flaws where we are and let other people see who we truly are leads to a hell of a lot more self-esteem. Because I can accept, the more I share what hurts and stings and what I'm not proud of about myself, the greater chance I have of working my way out of it.
I totally agree. And I think that that's a little bit about what Julie said, my vulnerability on my social media, on my Instagram stems from that, because that's how I started to feel like I could blossom, was when I found other people who were vulnerable, and it made me feel so much less alone. It made me feel like no matter what I was feeling shameful about or embarrassed about, somebody out there has felt that way. And anything you're feeling, that there is somebody out there who has been in the exact same position as you have been. And when you interact with that person, or even if you just see a message, you know, oh, I've been there, I can relate, it makes you feel so much less alone, and it makes you feel empowered to start doing something about it, you know, address kind of what stemmed from that situation. So, yeah, I think there's something to be said about just being open and being vulnerable about what it is that you're going through.
What feels good? Oh, go ahead, Brianna.
I read the Just for Today before I hopped on this, and it goes right back to what you said, Steve, so I just wanted to read it for you guys real quick. It says, it would be tragic to write out an inventory only to shove it in a drawer. These defects grow in dark and die in the light of exposure. Just for today, I will uncover my secrets, and I will practice being honest.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah.
It feels counterintuitive, right? I spent my whole life hiding every flaw. God forbid anybody know how imperfect I was, how many times I screwed up and made mistakes, or, I mean, even down to like wearing makeup, because God forbid anybody know what I actually look like, and, you know, all of that stuff. And to show up and let people see all those flaws is where the self-esteem starts building. And it feels completely counterintuitive. That was a major discovery that I made early in sobriety, was letting all of the ugly show, for sure.
I was never as bad as what I thought I was to everyone else.
Oh, never.
I was my own worst enemy every dang time.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to rewrite that internal narrative, my internal dialogue, that voice inside that you talked about, Janelle, the one that, you know, sits there and, what's that?
The one that's there all the time?
The one that's there all the time.
All the time.
The one that, you know, where the garbage drops out of your pocket and then you keep on walking and you're like, I should throw that out. And then you take another step and you're like, I should throw it out. I should throw that out. And then you take one more step and you're like, fuck, I'll go back and throw that out, because that's the right thing to do, right? Like, it'll just blow away because that's the lazy thing to do. But that little voice inside that's like, you know, the right thing to do is put the garbage in the garbage. It's like, yeah, okay, I'll go get that.
Doesn't mean I always throw it away, though. Sometimes I'm that imperfect human that leaves the trash on the ground and I'm like, then I beat myself up about it. But like, yeah, I'm not perfect.
None of us are perfect, no. I don't think. I mean, that's the whole point of this, right? That we're all completely imperfect humans. I know, I was thinking, like, when we were talking about mom shame and mom guilt, I remember yelling at my kids because my kids are kids and I was, you know, frazzled, and parents yell at their children sometimes. And then I would beat myself up for like the rest of the day just for yelling at them. And you know, we came back and reconnected and things were fine. And I would still just like shit on myself for the rest of the day. And, you know, if a friend had come to me and been like, oh my God, I just yelled at my kids, I feel terrible, I would have been like, you are a mom and your kids are kids and we're all human. That's normal. But for me, my expectation was so much higher. And I just, you know, for whatever reason, I thought I had to hold myself to some other standard. But I think that's another really valuable tool for building our self-esteem and self-worth is, what would you say to a friend in this situation? Because we're a lot kinder to other people than we are to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Trying to make yourself your own best friend, right?
Which is
my own.
Hard.
I know. It was all my. What's that?
I said, we're number one. You have to be number one in your life.
Yeah. When I was like number last for a really long time. So digging out of that hole and changing that whole perspective, it's a lot easier said than done, that's for sure. So that's why I think we don't do this stuff alone. But anyways, I think I'm going to wrap this up, and then I'm going to share a little bit, because I think there's one thing we didn't talk about. We always relied on someone else. We all talked about relying on someone else and getting like affirmation from outside to help us feel better about ourselves. Julie talked about hustling. We all did that, I think, in our own different way to keep that self-esteem, to keep that good feeling going. Feeling like we're not good enough and turning that around into feeling like I am good enough. Brianna, you just mentioned making yourself number one, listening to that inner voice, learning to stand up for ourselves, redefining a different word like sorry. Your feelings are valid. We don't have to agree on it. Brianna, I love that. That was great. Action your way through it is a perfect example of, you're down in a hole for a day or two, and it only seems to last a day or two for me now, but action my way through it is literally the way out of it. We really aren't alone in this. I've talked about living through our experiences, and somebody else out there has experienced the same thing in pretty much the same sort of way and felt the same way we do. And it's great when we can get together and talk about it. One thing we didn't mention was affirmations, teaching ourselves the good things about ourselves. I guess, Azure, you did in front of the mirror and with all of those other ladies, which is really, really hard to do. And when I started journaling, I wrote down a couple affirmations in my journal that, and I haven't journaled in a little bit, and something I need to pick back up again. But I had never done affirmations until I was almost 1,000 days sober. And the first, I figured I would write down four. So at the end of every journal entry, I write, I am confident, I am love, I am smart, and I am worthy. And then after that, I write, love myself. Because that's where it all starts. And that's where self-esteem all starts too, is loving ourselves. So I want to say thank you, Janelle. Thank you, Azure. And thank you, Brianna, for spending time with us today and sharing all about self-esteem. Really appreciate you guys.
Thanks for having me. It was nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you guys too.
Yeah, thanks for making the time.
Yeah, it was nice to see you guys here, talk to you guys instead of just in pictures.
Exactly. It's kind of cool to hang out all over the place.
Really cool.
Thanks so much for listening today. It's an honor to share a bit of your day with you. If you found this podcast helpful, we would love it if you would consider sharing it with others that might benefit from it. A quick post online, a mention in a conversation, things like that go a long way in helping us help others.